inspects the pictures on the box, his face hardens.
Put it back.
I don't answer.
Put it back.
It's official. He's lost his mind. I say nothing. This caveman talk will not be granted a reply. With any hope, he'll get the clue and shut up.
You are not using this on your hair.
He continues. I don't even know what to say to that. There isn't... I don't even... I'm going to pretend this whole trip to the store never happened and vow never to walk into another store with you ever again. In the meantime, step away from the display case and allow me to make a purchase. His expression loses its hard edge, turning soft and supplicating.
Your hair is real pretty and soft now. And you want to make it look like it did before? All flat and straight?
What? In the background, someone coughs. I steal a furtive glance in that direction and discover every single woman in the department staring back at us.
People are watching us,
I mutter.
Let him watch.
A couple of flashes go off. No doubt someone is taking video. Of me and my mangled hair. And my overbearing baby daddy who takes issue with my hair being flat. I hope to God I can look back on this one day and laugh about it. But not now. Definitely not now. Yeah, that's the idea. Flat and straight. Not this hot mess. His jaw stiffens, his gaze moving to the side.
I like it like this.
We stand there awkwardly for far too long. Him shifting on his sneakers, thumbs hooked into the front pockets of his jeans. Me slack-jawed, staring up at him. Invasion of the body snatchers. That's the only way I can explain what happens next. Very slowly, I place the flat iron back on the display case while my vanity screams at me not to be stupid, that he's a man and doesn't know shit about shit. But I don't listen. Because I know how hard it was for him to say what he said, and I don't want to let him down. My mother would crucify me if she knew, not to mention what Delia would say and do. I shudder to think. Though I'm pretty sure a horsewhip would be involved.
I need shoes,
I murmur, while staring longingly at the display of flat irons. When that's met with silence, I look up and find a soft smile on Dane's face. His fingers gently wrap around my wrist and tug me away. After I managed to find a pair of boots that did not make me look like a rhinestone cowgirl, we picked up lunch at a gourmet restaurant and headed to the hospital. While we ate, Mr. Wilder regaled me with stories about Dane's childhood, during which the person in question sat quietly in the corner, sullenly feigning disinterest, and devoured his food. Much to his chagrin, I now know that Dane was still wetting the bed at 5, and his first word was kiss. Apparently, his mother was always asking for a kiss, and Dane took to kissing like a boss. Hence, a player was born. After lunch and story time, Mr. Wilder was ready for a nap, and we headed back to the ranch. Dane parks the truck, and staring out the window says,
I want to show you something. You up for it?
My interest immediately piqued, I say, yes. He jumps out and opens my door before I can. Taking my hand, he helps me down and leads me to the barn.
Isn't she beautiful?
He murmurs as we both peer over the stall door side by side, elbows touching. I'm acutely aware of the heat traveling between us, and it makes me edgy. In the stall, big, dark eyes peer back. She's beautiful. Her coat a gunmetal gray. Not only are her eyes big, so is her belly. Please tell me she's pregnant, I say, even though I'm pretty sure of the answer.
She sure is. Due any day now.
What's her name?
Double D Ranch's big bad Mac Daddy's little mistress.
A 1,000-watt grin rips across his gorgeous face. It holds my attention a beat too long. Dane catches me staring at his mouth and his smile slips. My humiliation complete, I look away. Excuse me?
We call her Missy. The other is her show name.
She's a show pony, huh?
Missy takes umbrage at being called a pony. She's the leading competition cutting horse in the country. She and Levi have won everything there is to win.
Levi trained her?
Yep. Missy's got more cow sense than any horse I've ever seen.
He tells me, love in his eyes for the round little mare. What does that mean?
Cutting horses serve to separate cows from the herd. The horse does most of the work. Missy's a natural thinker. She can anticipate a change in direction when the cow or calf is looking to run better than the rider can. A good cutting horse is invaluable to a rancher. Missy here is so good, she's strictly a show horse, though.
Cute.
Cute! She's worth a little over half a million.
My mouth hangs open. I couldn't possibly have heard right. Did you say $500,000?
About 600K.
For a horse? Dane nods. Wow, good for Missy. While Dane's attention remains on the horse, I take my time drinking him in. He's in his element. The clean air, the sun. It takes a physical person to survive and flourish in a place like this, even with all the luxuries. And Dane is definitely a physical man. The kind that if forced behind a desk, he'd suffer. Like a sports show set desk. Why'd you leave? You look like you enjoy being here. Sighing deeply, he hangs his head.
This place reminds me of my mother.
When our eyes meet, his are clouded. By the sound of it, filled with memories he'd probably rather forget. He pauses and frowns.
All the bullshit she put my father through, it was real hard to watch. My pops is the best man I know. I hated seeing him hurt.
I have no words to console him. His story hits too close to home. There's only silence after that. A stretch of it. It's comfortable, though. In the same way it is when you share it with a good friend. Or a great book. I was 12. Alex was outside playing. I catch Dane watching me, and he doesn't look away. I'd gone in to use the bathroom and heard crying. It was my mother. She'd turned on the shower and put a towel over her mouth. But I heard her. She was crying hysterically.
Why was she crying?
His voice is low and warm, rolling over me as softly as a cashmere blanket. The Houston Police Department called to say my father was involved in a domestic dispute. The woman's husband came home and found them in bed. He shot them both. The memory takes me back instantly. The feelings so raw, I sometimes wonder if we don't store them in our bodies the same way we do a dormant virus, waiting to rear its ugly head every so often. Later that night, my mother told us he'd been killed. I remember thinking, good riddance. I wanted her to divorce him.
Did she?
No. He was a trucker. Gone a lot.
It wasn't the first time she caught him lying about a job.
And still, she refused to divorce him.
The memory still makes me mad.
A large hand covers mine, the one resting on the top of the stall door.
When I try to pull it away, he won't let me.
Instead, he gently wraps his rough fingertips around my wrist and holds on, his thumb brushing back and forth over my pulse point.
I look up and find his expression uncharacteristically sober.
"Where's your mother now?" I ask. He lets go of me and returns to leaning on the stall door, forearm hanging over the top.
"Barstow, California."
His hands stretch and tighten into fists.
"She runs a roadside diner with her boyfriend."
"Does it bother you?"
"Not as long as she doesn't contact my father. Why do you think I bought it for her?"
His unguarded eyes meet mine and I nod in understanding. The warm touch of a muzzle on my fingers gets my attention, the whiskers ticklish. I pet the velvet soft skin between Missy's nostrils and she nudges me back.
"Don't we make a fine pair?"
I say to myself more than anything.
"I think we do."
Dane's voice is deep and clear, straightforward. It makes my heart race. It makes me want things. The very things I've been trying to avoid all my life. My attention works back up to him. There's a profound sincerity in his steady gaze. And maybe, just maybe, the promise of something more. Chapter 17. Stella.
"Now, this here picture."
Mr. Wilder lifts his reading glasses and squints. We're in the gigantic kitchen slash family room, seated on the oversized, distressed leather couches. Everything in this house is oversized, not only the men. As soon as we brought Mr. Wilder home from the hospital, he made a beeline for the photo albums and called me over. I didn't realize people still kept photo albums. Apparently this one does, because he pulled out three of them. Judging by his colorful remarks of every picture he's shown me, he's taken it upon himself to embarrass Dane as much as possible. And truth be told, I can't say I'm not enjoying it. The object of ridicule is at present emptying the entire contents of the fridge, because God knows he can't go an hour without eating. Mr. Wilder holds up a picture of a young boy, around 5, wearing a straw cowboy hat, cowboy boots, and nothing else. I've never seen a more even tan.
"This is the time."
He turns his attention to his son, whose expression can only be described as pained. I bite my bottom lip hard enough to almost break skin.
"You remember, Dane, when I told you to stop playing with your pecker, and then you went about telling anyone that would listen that Woody Woodpecker was living in your shorts. Remember that?" "You never let me forget it,"
his surly son responds. Mr. Wilder's attention swings back to me, mischief written in the fine lines fanning out of the corners of his dark blue eyes.
"Asked the checkout girl at the supermarket if she wanted to see it. Played with his pecker all the time back then. Didn't like to put no clothes on either. He was always taking them off. For shit's sake, Dad! Time to cut back on the cussing, Dane. Can't be doing that around the baby."
Mr. Wilder winks and I laugh. A dimple pops up on his left cheek along with a smile. He turns the page and my eyes immediately go to a picture of the same young boy being held by a young blonde woman. Tall, shapely, eyes like a cat. In her tight jeans and tank top, she's more stunning than any supermodel. Mr. Wilder says, while his smile slowly melts.
"That's Dane's mama."
He stares at the picture with undisguised longing. "She's gorgeous," I gently offer. I can't imagine any man not being taken with her.
"And that there was the problem,"
he quietly confides. He puts the picture back in the album and points the full force of his attention at me.
"I can't tell you how happy I am to know you're in Dane's life, Stella. Both you and the baby."
My stomach sinks. There may as well be a neon sign above my head blinking, "Liar, liar, pants on fire," and an arrow pointing at me.
"If anything ever happens to me."
He clears his throat while mine begins to close, crammed with guilt.
"His sister's got a family. I don't want—"
He huffs out, clears his throat again.
"I don't want him to wind up like me. You know, alone."
Throat swelling, eyes brimming with tears, I fight the urge to lower them in shame. I like this man. I really like him. The thought of betraying his trust kills me.
"I worry about him,"
Mr. Wilder admits, hiding his discomfort behind a weak smile.
"I'm glad he's found someone that genuinely cares for him, and not all the other nonsense, if you get my meaning."
Peering thoughtfully into my eyes, he pats my knee twice and stands.
"What are we having for dinner?"
he asks his son.
"Shit on a shingle,"
says the chef.
"Well, can't say I haven't had that before,"
Bill mutters back. Oblivious to the quiet conversation that happened a moment ago, Dane looks up from whatever he's dicing or cutting or preparing. As soon as his gaze settles on me, he frowns. "I need some air," I mutter, and make a swift exit without waiting for a reaction or a reply. With Tinker as my escort, I march out of the front door and step into magic hour, the sky painted in jewel tones, the temperature already cooling as the sun gets ready to set in the distance. The hollow knock of boot heels against the wooden porch catches up with me. Lo and behold, I have company.
"Stella?"
I can't do this. Without a pause, I cross the gravel driveway on my way to the barn. I feel gross lying to your father. I'm mortified of what he'll think of me if he ever finds out. I should go back to New York.
"You're calling an audible now?"
My feet skid to a stop, kicking up dust. Pivoting, I direct my confusion at the man who spoke. "In English would be good. Spanish works too."
"You can't leave me. Band of brothers."
"What? What are you talking about?"
"We're a team. No man left behind."
"You're getting weirder by the second. First, we're not on the gridiron. And second, if you're saying what I think you're saying, it's no child left behind. And you are no child. Most of the time." I mutter the last part, though judging by the V between his brows, he heard me all the same.
"Birds of a feather stick together?"
"Dane!" I'm beyond exasperated. "Now is not the time for your antics."
"Okay. Look."
He turns serious in a heartbeat, shedding the mask that makes everyone believe he doesn't have a care in the world. Taking hold of my arms, he pulls me closer. So close, I'm forced to tip my head back to watch his face, and I do nothing to stop him. Questionable decision, but I'm chalking it up to being cold and seeking warmth. His eyes bore into mine, and I almost sway into him as a warm blast of body heat wraps around me. With it comes his scent. He smells so good it's criminal. Like great sex and sunshine and laundry detergent. Or pheromones. Or whatever it is that turns smart, self-respecting women into sex-starved nymphos. Dratted hormones. Freaking biological weapons.
I've never seen him this happy.
As an opening gambit, it's a pretty good one. One sentence, and I'm already starting to go belly up. I can feel it. Shame on me.
The last time I saw him remotely this happy was 6 years ago when my sister had her daughter. Before that, it was the Super Bowl, and that was 8 years ago. I'd like for it to last a little longer.
He breathes out a tired exhale, his concern-filled eyes holding mine captive.
Is that too much to ask?
I can't say no to him when he lays it on me like that. I can't leave my man behind. Oops, strike that. I can't leave this man behind. This man. He's not mine. I need to remember that. I divert my line of sight over his shoulder, but he won't let me get away. He crouches, meeting me face to face.
Don't leave. Please?
It's the supplicating look that fells me, the desperation in his voice. I can't disappoint him. Not when he places himself at my mercy, making himself vulnerable in a way I'm sure almost never happens. In all likelihood, if I were to let him down now, it would never happen again. I'm not leaving, I mutter begrudgingly. His expression softens with relief. Then he smiles, quickly reverting back to his usual cheerful self.
Band of Brothers?
I laugh. It's impossible not to around him. With an eye roll and a quick head shake, I say what must be said. Birds of a feather stick together. Dinner was a team effort. Dane cooked stir-fried chicken. I made the fresh guacamole and threw together a mixed salad. His father toasted the bread and dinner was served. Levi, it seems, was to provide the entertainment. He walked in carrying a guitar. You play? I ask him as the men finish clearing the table and I begin loading the dishwasher.
Stella, you've got to hear my boy sing,
Bill tells me as he gets comfortable in his leather chair by the fireplace.
Most amazing voice. Better than Vince Gill, in my opinion.
Better than Vince Gill must be high praise from Bill. At the comparison, Levi smirks at me. I have no idea who Vince Gill is, and my curiosity is now piqued. I steal a glance at Dane, who's leaning against the fireplace, and find a smile on his face that tells me there's a lot more to this story. Will you play something? Shrugging, Levi turns bashful.
Sure. Anything you want to hear?
You choose, I tell him. I close the dishwasher, walk over to the couch, and get comfortable. Meanwhile, Levi retrieves the guitar and sits on the ottoman, testing out the strings. The couch dips as Dane sits next to me. His arm stretches across the back and his eyes fix on his brother as if the answers to the universe rest on Levi's lips.
This little tune is by Keith Urban and Eric Church,
Levi tells us with a soft smile. Then, closing his eyes, he starts playing.
Raise 'em up. I'm talking about a lighter on a Saturday night. The band plays a song you like and you sing along. Raise 'em up. I'm talking about Daddy's old pickup truck. Shotgun seat, there's the one you love and you're kissing on.
Levi West, lost in song, is a breathtaking sight to behold. His voice deep and soulful and set your panties on fire sexy. This man was born to sing.
Got those white sails sailing down in Mexico. It's just a whiskey glass if you ain't making a toast. Lift your tear-filled eyes up to the sky. A coming home. You've been gone too long. Tonight we're gonna raise 'em up. Raise 'em up.
Seated in the armchair across from me, I watch Mr. Wilder's eyes get wet. He catches me and smiles. He doesn't look away. He doesn't hide his open show of emotion. He wears it proudly on his sleeve. If I thought the world of this man before, he just catapulted himself into superhero category.
You got a voice. You got a choice. Go make some noise. Don't ever let him tell you who you are. Raise him up. Fist, black and blue, fight for the truth. It's what you do. Hand on your heart for the stripes and stars. Black umbrellas in the pouring rain. A Sunday morning. Coming down. Amazing grace. Lift those tear-filled eyes up to the sky. As the flag flies, say goodbye. Tonight we're gonna raise 'em up.
Levi's eyes drift open, the color made even more arresting by the dim light of the Tiffany lamp. He points them at Dane and goosebumps race over my skin, a charge of awareness amplified by the music, the lyrics speaking more eloquently than I ever could. I tried my best to fight the tide of emotion building between us, tried desperately to keep this thing contained and controlled. And still, he found the cracks, seeped in, and burrowed his way to my heart. I continue to watch Levi out of self-preservation. I can't bring myself to look at Dane. I can't do it because I'm afraid of what I'll find if I do. But more importantly, what he'll see in me.
So you meet someone, the only one. You take her by the hand, make a stand, buy some land, make some love, and them babies come. Raise 'em up, raise 'em up, raise 'em up trophy high. Raise 'em up to the sky. Raise 'em up, show everybody that newborn smile. Raise 'em up tall and strong. Raise 'em up right from wrong. Raise 'em up so damn high they can hear God singing along.
That against my best efforts, I'm falling in love. There wasn't a dry eye in the house by the time Levi got done singing. Soon after, he went back to his place, a small house on the other side of the barn, and I went back to cleaning the countertops in need of a distraction.
I'm turning in,
Mr. Wilder announces.
I'm feeling more tired than usual.
Sitting at the counter stool, Dane glances up from reading something on his phone.
Get some rest, Dad. It'll be a while before you're feeling like yourself again. You two staying in your room or the guest room?
Dead silence. Not a peep out of Dane, and I don't speak in fear I'll say the wrong thing and accidentally spill the beans.
Yeah, we're in the guest room. That's what I thought. Okay, then. Good night.
Mr. Wilder claps Dane on the shoulder and walks out of the room. What do we do now? I whisper hiss. Weary resignation is written on Dane's face. He exhales tiredly, shoulders dropping.
I have to stay with you.
What? I shout very, very quietly.
My room's two doors down from his. I have to pass it to get to the kitchen. He'll know if I sleep in my room, trust me. The man's got bat ears. Your room is on the opposite side of the house.
Oh.
Exactly.
15 minutes later, stepping into my bedroom with Dane close behind, I turn to find him braced against the closed door. The only way to describe his demeanor is that of an animal being led to slaughter. What the hell is his problem? This is your fault, you know.
I know,
he grinds out, his jaw clenched tightly. I shouldn't be hurt. I have no right to be hurt. Why should I care that he looks sick over the prospect of sharing a room with me? And yet, I am. I grab the oversized t-shirt and head for the bathroom. I do my thing and return 15 minutes later to find him sitting at the end of the bed with a look of dread on his face.
"I'm taking a shower,"
he announces, not sparing me a glance as he moves past me and into the bathroom. This is way above my pay grade. I don't possess the necessary training to make sense of this behavior. 20 minutes later, I'm tucked into the cozy bed reading glasses on Delia's latest manuscript on Dane's iPad when he steps out of the bathroom. And I instantly turn into Joan of Arc, burned at the stake. Except the heat doesn't start at my feet. No. It starts between my legs and spreads forth. By the time it reaches my face, there's a veil of sweat above my lips. A wall of finely sculpted flesh walks further into the room with only a scrap of towel to hide the extra good parts. There's so much razzle-dazzle to take in, my mind locks onto one area. His abdominal muscles. Mother of G.O.D. What kind of torture must one endure to get those? So cut, they don't even look real. Mentally, I'm poking them with my index finger to see if they poke back. Until something intrudes in the periphery of my vision. South of these spectacular ab muscles, the towel wrapped around his waist starts to rise. That's when I hear a snapping of fingers. A large hand immediately comes into view and more snapping of fingers.
"Eyes up, shorty, or you'll get more of a show than you bargained for."
My gaze makes a swift trip back up to his face. His mouth is twisted in a grimace and his eyebrow arched. He's not happy I was looking. Whatever. "Don't look so scared. I pinky promise not to molest you." His eyes widen while his lips thin.
"You know what? It's still early. I'm gonna get a workout in. I'll be back later."
A workout? At 9 p.m.? He doesn't even wait for me to respond. He grabs his clothes in a hurry, and a moment later he's gone. I know I don't have a ton of experience with men, but this can't be normal behavior. This has got to be far from normal behavior. The next morning, I wake up to an empty bed and Mr. Wilder brewing a fresh pot of coffee in the kitchen. He informs me that Dane and Levi went off to fix fencing and won't be back until late afternoon. Dane left a note telling me to use his office if I needed to get work done, and I took him up on his offer. They returned around 6. I made dinner. We ate. And shortly afterward, Dane was snoring on the couch. I don't know. He's acting so weird and skittish around me. I have no idea what happened, but something did. I switch the cell to my other shoulder and continue filing my nails. Del returns. "That's it? In your infinite wisdom on men, that's all you have for me?"
"Is he sneaking out without you? You know, to hook up? Maybe it's guilt. The broodmare's at home while he kicks up his studly heels. Because if that's the case, I hope he chokes on it."
The thought alone makes my stomach drop and my chest ache. I don't think so. He's usually so tired after working on the ranch all day he can barely get a word out at dinner, and this is a man that never shuts up.
"I'm going to need more info to solve this puzzle. Do some recon and get back to me."
"Del."
"Yeah?"
"What if he's having second thoughts?" I murmur, voicing my biggest fear.
"He's not. And if he is, then we're better off without him. Better to find out now than later."
We all have your back.
Al, me, your mom.
Even Tina and Will. You know that." She's right. She's absolutely right. I know that. I really do. It's just that I was starting to really like having Dane around. He made me see things differently.
Dane. 2 full days of ranch work and my body feels worse than it did when I was playing. I never hurt this much, not even by the time playoffs rolled around. Fact, ranch life is hard. All the more reason to convince my father to sell it. Not to mention how I've been working out lately. Brutal. But it's either that or walk around pissed off all day with a hard on. Next to me, Levi whistles along with the radio while we slowly drive the fence line. It's already the end of September and still hotter than Hades in summer. What are you going to tell the old man? Or do I have to do it? Wiping my brow with the hem of my shirt, I turn and await Levi's response. He makes a face and grips the steering wheel tighter.
Can't tell him now that he ain't feeling good. Might set his recovery back.
He's fine, and you ain't getting any younger. You intend to tell him you want to move to Nashville when you're old as dirt?
I know, he grunts.
Pissed at the situation, if I'm reading him right. We both spot a hole along the barbed wire fence, and Levi parks the old Chevy pickup, the one my mother used to drive, if I recall correctly. I hate this truck.
What about you?
What about me?
You ain't fooling me, Dane. You're so gone over that woman, she's making you crazy. Tell her and get it over with.
Levi grabs the tools from the back of the pickup while I put on my hat and suede gloves. I'm not gone over no one. I don't get gone. Levi chuckles.
I don't know why you fight it. She's a good one. Shit, if I were you, I'd be jumping through hoops to show her how I feel. Maybe then you can get laid and put us all out of our misery.
What's that supposed to mean? I throw my hat at him and he catches it. Smiling, he throws it back. Then he hands me the new wire and pliers and we get to work.
It means you've been acting like a first-class asshole since you got here, and it hasn't gone unnoticed.
His words give me pause. I have been a touch irritable lately, with the situation being what it is, untenable as fuck. She doesn't want to have anything to do with me, other than what was agreed upon, and I can't stop thinking about her in every conceivable way, and in every conceivable position.
What are you thinking about?
I stop cutting and ripping out wire to see Levi wearing a smirk. Nothing. Take care of your own damn business, or I'll take care of it for you. He smiles wider, starts whistling a tune. The whistling turns to singing. I stop what I'm doing to listen. Dang, my brother sure can sing. What song is that?
Passenger, he tells me before he starts up again. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go.
Levi grins. I shake my head and flip him the bird.
And you let her go.
Chapter 18. Stella. By day 3 of waiting for Dane and Levi to return from fixin' fencin' or feeding the stock or whatever it is they do to get filthy and sweaty, I'm ready for a change of pace, or to start consuming large quantities of liquor. Either will do. I wasn't cut out to sit around twiddling my thumbs. I've made good use of Dane's laptop. However, as far away from the office as I am, there's only so much work I can get done. Ira's been incredibly understanding as usual. Even Missy is getting tired of my visits. Mr. Wilder, relegated to porch ornament status because of the heart attack, is getting antsy too. Both of us being workaholics, we've found comfort in that shared misery. It's 6 by the time we watch the 2 men approaching. Dane's shirt is hanging open, and sweat covers his bare chest. And he's wearing a straw cowboy hat. With that loose-limbed walk, eyes hidden under the hat, he reminds me of a stripper. The good kind. Not the kind that Tina had at her bachelorette party. I could barely watch those guys. Apologies, but having a stranger gyrate his sweaty balls in my face while wearing a teal-colored satin thong is not my idea of sexy. This guy, however. This one I watch with bated breath. Do I focus on admiring his glistening chest, or the ab muscles that look carved with a chisel,
Or maybe the strip of hair peeking out over his low-slung jeans. So much to choose from. The temperature of my body rises the closer he gets. I brush the bead of sweat off my forehead with the back of my wrist, like I'm starring in my own private ranch version of Gone with the Wind. I'm about to spontaneously combust, and the man isn't even standing within reach. What would happen if he actually touched me? At this rate, I'd probably drop dead. This can't be happening. Not with this man. Not when I've spent the better part of my life trying to avoid this trap. My mind keeps screaming, "Forbidden, forbidden, back away from the beefcake," while the rest of me strongly disagrees. We need space. Lots of it. Anybody feel like going out tonight? I have no clue where that came from, but suddenly determine it's a brilliant idea.
"Yeah, sure,"
Levi answers, while Dane says,
"Hell no."
I'm relieved to hear Dane say no. That part of me that's getting hot and bothered over him is growing bolder, more demanding every minute I spend in his presence. "You don't mind taking me along with you, Levi?" Levi's smile is immediate and a tad over-enthused.
"Taking out a pretty lady? No, I definitely do not mind."
Frowning at Levi, Dane scratches the back of his neck.
"Are you sure that's a good idea? In your condition?"
"My condition? Last time I checked, pregnancy wasn't contagious. And if I don't get out, I'm going to go stir crazy. Your dad goes to sleep early and you're always working out." Every day since he's moved into my room, a strange new routine has begun. He works all day, takes a shower, and we eat dinner. Then, when I'm getting ready for bed, he goes to the home gym and works out. Sometime around midnight, I hear him come in while I pretend to be asleep. I'm a notoriously light sleeper. No way am I not noticing a 230-pound giant creeping into my bed, no matter how big the bed is. At first, he stays mostly on his side. Then, little by little, he creeps closer and closer until his body is curved around mine with barely any air between us. Meanwhile, I continue to pretend to be asleep. The funny thing is, he actually believes I can sleep through the bed dipping, the scorching heat emanating from his body burning my back, his dick, which is always hard, brushing against my ass. He thinks I'm sleeping through that. He could wake me from life support with that. 10 minutes later, he's breathing deeply, sound asleep. Soon after that, I fall asleep as well. But every morning, I wake up to an empty bed, and we both pretend it never happened. "I don't get it. Don't you do enough physical labor during the day to tire you out?" I ask. Dane's face does something weird. Something I can't decipher. Levi snickers, which makes me suspicious, as if they're sharing a private joke at my expense.
"I need to clean up. Stella, how about we leave in an hour?"
"Sounds great. Thanks, Levi." With that, he walks inside, leaving us standing on the porch, staring at each other, a scowl still hanging on Dane's face.
"You're not going."
I must not have heard him correctly. He couldn't possibly have given me orders. "Would you like to use the shower first?" I ask, as I turn and walk back into the house.
"Did you hear what I said?"
he practically shouts. My blood starts to sizzle. I'm going to do you a kindness and pretend I didn't. He's fast on my heels as I walk into the bedroom we now share. The bedroom door slams shut. I continue on to the bathroom, stop and turn, gearing up for the argument I know is coming. A wall of golden flesh manifests inches from my face. No shirt. What in the world happened to his shirt in the time we walked in here? Arms crossed, he's wearing a mulish expression, which makes perfect sense because he's acting like an ass. I take a step back into the bathroom, and his hand shoots out to stop the door from closing. Everything about him says he's spoiling for a fight. Time to deflect.
No ink, huh? I casually ask.
Nope.
He leans a muscular arm against the doorframe. If that's not an invitation for me to roll my eyes, I don't know what is. I thought all you guys had some these days.
First off, darling, you don't desecrate a work of art with graffiti.
The idiocy of that statement makes me bite my bottom lip, curbing a bark of laughter.
And second, who's you guys?
Never mind, I mutter, leaving him to turn the shower on. Can you get out? I need to get ready. Silence. So much of it, I glance behind me to see if he's gone.
Nope. Do you want to jeopardize this pregnancy?
Stop being so dramatic.
I'm not dramatic.
Sure you're not. Heavy sarcasm. This performance is starting to rival Elizabeth Berkeley's in Showgirls. I walk over to him and push his chest. His bare chest. The one that feels like solid rock under my hand. Except rock isn't warm and doesn't flex under my touch. Rock doesn't make my mouth water and my stomach churn. Rock doesn't make me want to get on my knees, naked. A warm puff of air hits my scalp. I push against his chest and Dane exhales harshly, stepping back. Before he can get another word in, I shut the door, my heart pounding viciously. We need space, and I need a cold shower. That's the ticket. Nothing a cold shower can't remedy. 20 minutes later, I'm dressed in jeans and a black long-sleeve silk top, the one that's a bit tighter than usual because of my growing breast size. And the heels. Let's not forget the heels. Somehow I've managed to tame my hair into soft waves, a serious accomplishment in my book. Tonight, for the first time in ages, I care what I look like. My appearance hasn't been a priority for a long time. Working in an environment where the majority of my colleagues are men, it would have been either stupid or naive for me to pretend that how I presented myself would go unnoticed. In the beginning, I heard the sexist remarks. I saw the leers. I had other battles to fight, however. One of poverty, the massive student loans I had to pay back, proving my worth to the company. So I chose to hide behind my shapeless suits. Regardless, it was always my choice. I step into the living room and get 3 very different reactions. Levi grins wickedly. Bill smiles affectionately. Dane grimaces like I've kicked him in the nuts.
You're not going out like that,
he announces. I'm not prone to bursts of anger. You would think being half Cuban and half Irish would make me hot-tempered, and yet I'm not. Not even a little. In my opinion, that's a bunch of baloney. There's hot and cool in every culture, and what little of it I may have had was easily snuffed out when I started working at Goldman Sachs. If there is one thing you must learn as a trader, it's to control your emotions. All the training in the world could not have prepared me for this, however. I take a deep breath, otherwise I may throw something at him. Yes, I am, I say as gently as possible. This caveman routine is getting tiresome. I don't care what lie he's trying to sell to his father, I won't put up with this. My gaze does a cursory assessment of his wrinkled gray t-shirt and his threadbare jeans. I guess you're not coming. Levi, are you ready?
As my woman, you should respect my wishes.
A miniature nuclear explosion goes off in my head. My fury is immediate.
His woman?
Does he have heat stroke from working outdoors all day? I steal a brief glance at Bill and find him dusting off his jeans. My suspicion is there's no dust on his jeans. I'll give you exactly 1 minute to walk that back, I tell him quietly. Dane's eyes narrow on me. Abruptly, he gets off the couch, stalks to the closet, and retrieves a gladiator ball cap.
Fine. I'm coming with you.
He stuffs the cap on his head, the flat brim just above his eyes. Oh, the joy. Suit yourself, I retort, and walk to the door, Levi leading the way. 10 minutes later, we're cruising down a highway. Levi in the driver's seat and the knuckle-dragger in the back, arms crossed in protest of being consigned there. Where are we going? I ask Levi.
A place called Rowdy's. They have dancing and live music.
Absolutely not. We're not going to Rowdy's.
Someone in the back interrupts. Sounds perfect. Rowdy's it is, I say, practically giddy at the prospect of a night of fun. After that, I turn up the music and Levi begins singing. His voice is sexy and soulful, raspy and edged with sadness that resonates in my bones. Aside from the pretty face, that voice will break a million hearts one day. I'm sure of it. The parking lot at Rowdy's is jam-packed. The painted mural of a cowboy riding a bull on the front of the building, one that looks like it was at one time a turn-of-the-century factory, pulsates with energy. A neon sign throws hot pink light on everything within its reach. I'm so excited I'm dancing in my seat. The minute Dane gets out of the truck, he places his hand on my lower back. The steady pressure grounds me. The warmth ripples up my spine and makes my hair stand on end. I look up to find heavy-lidded eyes watching me. His expression is stoic at first, but then a small smile tips up one corner of his sensual lips, and those green-gold eyes might as well be shouting volumes without saying a thing.
You two ready? Or are we going to stand around making eyes at each other all night?
Dane levels Levi with a disapproving look, and we all head for the door. Inside, I can barely hear myself think over the roar of the crowd and the live music.
I knew this was going to be a shit fest.
I hear the man pinned to my side grumble. He throws a protective arm around my shoulders and pulls me closer. You would think that every person that walks by us poses grave and imminent danger the way he's behaving. Levi points to a booth at the edge of the room.
That one's reserved for us.
We make our way to the table, Dane draped all over me. He may as well be riding piggyback. At the booth next to ours, three cowboys around Levi's age laugh and carry on. It looks like they've been partying for a while. Beer bottles and shot glasses litter their table. One of them catches my eye and, smiling, tips his hat at me.
Who are you smiling at?
Dane doesn't wait for me to answer. His gaze slides over to the three men. The one watching me continues to smile. Dane's arm falls heavy across my shoulders while he shoots the poor idiot smiling a nasty glare.
Wanna dance?
Levi asks.
No, she doesn't,
the Neanderthal sitting next to me answers. It's becoming increasingly difficult to ignore his shenanigans. I don't know how to dance like that, I confess, scanning the dance floor. Couples move around in some sort of country-western-style dancing to a really good cover of a Lady Antebellum song.
I'll teach you.
I push aside the same tired voice I've been hearing all of my life, that tells me I'm going to make a fool of myself. I don't have to be perfect. Not tonight. I'm 33 years old, and I don't know what fun is. It's high time I fix that. Okay, let me go to the ladies' room first. On the other side of the room, a trendy vintage neon sign points me in the right direction. Once I get there, I do my business, apply more lip gloss, and gleefully get ready to make a fool of myself on the dance floor. All goes well. The problem presents itself as soon as I step out of the ladies' room, where I find Mr. Urban Cowboy from the booth next to ours leaning up against the wall, thumbs hooked into his tooled belt, wearing a decidedly sly grin.
Hi.
Hiya, I reply, suddenly uneasy.
Is that your boyfriend?
No beating around the bush with this one. No, I answer honestly.
Didn't think so.
Urban Cowboy smiles wider.
Hey!
Comes a firm shout from afar. An angry giant looms large down the crowded, narrow hallway. People give him a wide berth as Dane quickly closes the distance between us. Suddenly alert, urban cowboy drops the lazy charmer act and pushes off the wall.
"Fuck off,"
is directed at the cowboy, who is easily 2 inches and 50 pounds smaller. Dane's voice is low and angry, marked with the promise of violence. Even I get goosebumps and I'm in no danger. Urban cowboy hesitates for a beat before deciding that I'm more trouble than I'm worth. He slinks away quietly after a shrug aimed at me. Probably for the best. "What is your problem? Seriously, are you feeling faint? Is it heat stroke? Because that would be a legitimate reason for the crap you've been pulling since we walked in. Otherwise, you're just being a jerk." I storm past him, in a hurry to get back to Levi and take him up on his offer.
"Some strange dude's mushroom head is not going to be poking my son. If anybody is getting that honor, it'll be me."
My feet stop so suddenly, I almost topple over. Mushroom head? The man has lost his ever-loving mind, and in public, no less. I turn and take a moment to collect myself, to put a lid on the unusual flare of temper he's managed to elicit in me. I thought that was impossible, and yet here I stand, blood boiling. I have no idea where this hostility is coming from, but I suggest that you go home and sleep it off.
"You want sex. I'm happy to help you out."
Help me out? As in a pity fuck? I gave him a chance, drew the line in the sand, and told him nicely not to cross it. And he trampled it, along with my feelings. Now the gloves are off. "You think I need your charity? I'm not your type, remember? Any one of those three guys at the next table would be happy to help me out."
"Over my dead body,"
he mutters, stepping past me and effectively cutting off any chance I have of escape. "That can be arranged," I grind out as I jerk to the left. He blocks me. "Get out of my way, Dane." His expression switches from frustration to pain to irritation so quickly I can hardly keep up. He's struggling with something and I can't for the life of me figure out what it is.
"Still. I..."
He takes off his ball cap and runs a hand through his hair, biting on his lower lip.
"Let me take you home."
Jesus Christ, I came to have a little bit of fun. This is going to sound like a foreign concept to you, but I haven't had much of it in my life. Can you allow me just a little fun? I don't think I'm asking for much. Shoulders sagging, he finally steps aside. I pass without a backward glance. Common sense tells me this isn't the end of it.
Chapter 19. Dane. I swear on all that's holy I'm gonna have a stroke tonight if I see one more son of a bitch smile at Stella like he's picturing her on her knees. Levi's teaching her to line dance. She's terrible, for Pete's sake. The woman's got two left feet. And it doesn't look like she cares, either. Those two have been laughing it up for the last hour while I sit here at the bar pounding beers and plotting the murder of anyone who gets near her.
"Penny for your thoughts, darling,"
a familiar voice sing-songs. "Nothing like your best friend busting your balls to take a mood from bad to worse." He slides onto the recently vacated stool next to mine. "As the owner of this fine establishment, don't you have work to do?" He eyeballs the empty shot glass in front of me with suspicion.
"Every good business owner knows how to delegate."
This delivered with a side eye and a smirk. I continue picking away at the label of the beer bottle, eyes aimed down to keep from becoming a victim of Noah's ruthless examination. "Fair warning. I'm in no mood, Callahan." As much as I try not to glance at the dance floor, I lose that battle in seconds, drawn to her by a power that I'm coming to understand I have zero control over.
"What crawled up your ass, sweetheart?"
My narrowed-eyed gaze moves away from Stella, but not fast enough for Noah to miss.
"Girl trouble?"
The bartender slides a beer in front of him. Noah tips his head at the guy, then takes a chug of the brew.
What am I, a fucking teenager? I do not have girl trouble. Stella is not my girl. She's the mother of my child. When I don't get an obnoxious reply, I look over. Next to me, Noah's wide shoulders quake, his face swollen from containing the laughter dying to burst out of him. Get it out, asshole. I catch the bartender's attention. Another Jaeger. He pours one without delay. I knock it back, the burn no longer uncomfortable but welcome. Feeling anything other than this underlying rage is good. A loud boom of laughter rises above the music, even above the noise of the crowd. Look, I'm gonna help you out 'cause I love you, and generally you're a good guy. He wipes tears of laughter away from his eyes. For entertainment value, I'd like to see you eat shit for as long as possible, but I'm feeling charitable tonight. Is this the part where I tell you to go fuck yourself? Not yet. Okay, here goes. He takes a deep breath, fighting back more laughter. You're in love, you dumb motherfucker! After which, he punishes me with a shit-eating grin. This is the help you speak of? This is you being charitable? I told you I wasn't in the mood for none of your rubbish. I'm serious, Dane. I take a good look at my friend. He is serious. Where'd you get that harebrained idea? Anyone that's ever suffered from unrequited love can read that condition on your face from 5 counties away. His gaze drifts off, his throat working as he takes another swig of beer. Present company included, he mutters. Unrequited? This bullshit demands an eye roll. Now I know you're messing with me. Are you sleeping with her? Did she profess her love for you? No? So then it ain't requited. That makes it unrequited. I can't be in love. God help me if this is what love feels like. I can't be in love. I don't have a good opinion of it, but it can't feel this bad. He slaps me on the shoulder. Brother, ain't nothing special about love. It's a condition, like eczema or erectile dysfunction. And like any condition, you can treat it, make it better, but it will never fully go away. That right there, he says, tipping his beer bottle toward the dance floor where Stella's having so much fun she's apparently forgotten I even exist, is the medicine for your pain. Tell her how you feel. Go be with her and you won't feel crappy no more. Maybe I am in love. I've always had a bad opinion of it, so it makes sense that it should feel this god-awful. Then again, I haven't gotten laid in far too long. I'll tell you what I'm suffering from, the reason I feel like this. I believe the correct medical term is blue balls. I need to get laid and right quick. It's clouding my judgment. 3 bar stools over, I spot a curvy blonde making eyes at me, and in return, I give her my best smile. Noah's eyes shift from me to the blonde, and his face loses some of its amusement. I know that look on your face, Dane, he warns, head shaking. Don't be doing nothing stupid. You wronged that woman and there's no getting back to right. The underlying darkness in Noah's voice gets my attention. He has that look about him, the one he's been wearing for a decade. It comes and goes, and tonight it makes an appearance. Disappointment and hopelessness are as comfortable on him as an old pair of jeans. What a waste. Another perfect example of the dangers of loving a woman. There's no talking to him about it, though. I jerk a chin at the blonde, and she moseys over. Wanna dance?
I've been waiting for you to ask, sugar.
She responds in a baby voice. It grates on my already inflamed nerves.
Learn from my mistake, Dane. Don't do this.
Noah sounds genuinely concerned for me. The 4 beers and 3 Jägermeister shots I drank tell me to ignore him. Taking the blonde's hand, I guide her past a wall of bodies and onto the dance floor.
Three couples to my left, Stella laughs when Levi moves her around. She seems